Welcome to the Travelling Tribes podcast, the latest insight into group travel and tourism trends. Host Jeff Gader, publisher of Leisure Group Travel Magazine and author of Travelling Tribes, interviews travel industry standouts and influencers for an engaging conversation about group travel.
Hello, everybody. Jeff Gadick here from the Traveling Tribes podcast. Welcome today and happy to have with me a very special guest, Steve Ridgway from Criterion Travel. Steve, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Nice to have you on. I'm excited to talk with you today, specifically about your niche in the marketplace. But I guess to start, you were connected to me by one of our writers, Cindy Bertram, who I don't know if she ran into you at an event or somehow was connected, but you had a conversation and she led me to you, which I think is kind of how the travel industry operates. It's usually a series of interconnections of people and personalities.
It is, for sure. And actually, our public relations specialist, Mike Hicks, made the introduction.
Perfect. So, Steve, I don't know a ton about your business, which I think in some ways is a great way to do a podcast because I learn as we go through here. I did read your bio, so I at least got that far, and I know the basis of the company. And I saw that you were born in a small Midwest town. So being from the Midwest myself, curious to know sort of where you grew up and where your roots are.
Sure. I was born and raised in Lawrence, Kansas.
Okay.
And coincidentally, that was the location of a company called Maupin Tour. Maupin Tour was one of the first companies, escorted tour operators, to be formed after World War II. One of a group of pioneering companies that really set the standard for escorted group touring.
Absolutely. Maupin Tour is one of the greatest names in travel. Historically, those folks that have been around, I mean, would put that with like a Tauk, right? Or a Colette, really, that sort of legacy. And I'm taking it that you worked there. It was part of your upbringing.
I did. I was there for about 12 years. Ended up as the marketer, working directly for Tom Maupin, who was quite an amazing person. And the last few years I was there, I represented Maupin Tour at USTOA. So I got to know a lot of these entrepreneurs, pretty amazing people, like Arthur Tauk, like Jimmy Murphy of Brendan, like Lars Erik Lindblad, who started Sven's father, actually. Like, let's see.
The Sullivans, right, would be synonymous there. Yep, yeah. John Stachnik, you might remember him. Yeah, John.
Of course, Mayflower Tours. Of course, I remember John. I think, and in fact, I think you had an experience working with him. Alex Harris of General Tours, a lot of real pioneers. I actually met Arthur Frommer, who authored a series of guidebooks back in the day called Europe on $5 a Day. Can you imagine?
You can't get a cup of coffee for $5 a day.
Exactly right. But he actually led the way for a lot of young U.S. travelers to go to Europe on a very slim budget. So a lot of history there. And so I came to appreciate the escorted tour business very closely. But then I kind of spread my wings. I ended up in LA working for another of these companies called Olson Travel World.
Okay.
And I was involved with a division of that company called AARP Travel Service. And that was my exposure to the affinity travel niche because travel programs were offered directly to members of the American Association of Retired Persons. Then a mutual friend introduced me to a young man who had a company based in Palo Alto, California, that was active in the affinity travel niche, but working with the organizations that had more of an educational overlay to the escorted tours that they operated. So I went to work there, and it was actually a great opportunity for me, Jeff, because I grew up in a little university town in the Midwest. Then I got involved in the travel business, and all of a sudden, I found a company that combines travel with education. So, you know, best of both worlds.
So, absolutely. And I love sort of the progression that your life has made because it really follows what we've seen in the group marketplace. Yeah, I one of my first jobs was working for Mayflower Tours. So we mentioned John Stathic earlier, and the type of travelers that we dealt with were very travel-wise, they were very unsophisticated. You know, many of them couldn't check themselves into a hotel if they were traveling. So they needed that guidance from an escorted tour company to see the world. And obviously, we didn't have any of the technology tools, you know, quote unquote, back in the day for people to even, you know, plan things like that, other than the Fromer travel guides and such. There, you know, there weren't smartphones and internet searches and ChatGTP and all the things that people rely on these days. But you know, the transformation that we've seen, and certainly your career has taken, is that we've gone from sort of an age-based group travel market to an affinity-based group travel market.
Mm-hmm. And about 15 years ago, I spun off and set up my own company, that is Criterion Travel. And what we did then was to kind of cherry pick the affinity clients that we had and focus upon those that had that most strongly emphasize the educational content of their trip. And by that, I mean, it's not like you're going into a classroom anywhere. These are traditional escorted tours or small ship cruises, excursions every day, excellent local guides every day. But these organizations all make a point of sending a lecturer along. If it's an alumni association, usually it's a professor, a museum, a curator, or a scientist, and so on. And so we like to say that they provide a 35,000-foot view. They supplement what the local guides have to say with some historical perspective. Well, and some of them have amazing areas of expertise. We work with some world-class scientists and educators that really enriches the experience for the people who are on the trip.
Give me an example of some of the universities that you work with and maybe some of the other affinity type organizations, just so we can get a perspective of the type of clients that you're dealing with, Steve.
Sure. We work with most of the Ivies. We run trips for Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Penn, Dartmouth, Cornell, MIT, Stanford, some museums like the Smithsonian, National Geographic in the day, Santa Barbara Museum of Art. Other organizations like the National Trust for Historic Preservation, Archaeological Institute of America, World Affairs Council, the list kind of goes on. Actually, for an affinity tour operator, it's not a large list. We're not a large company by design. We've stayed pretty small. We only have about 17 people.
Okay.
But we want to focus on the longtime clients that we've had and serve them as best we can. And a part of the result of that is that our destination expertise is basically worldwide, because our clients want to vary the offerings they give their members each year. And so through the years, we've located reliable destination management companies, guides, et cetera, in most every destination around the world. So it's really been fun. That's one reason I'm still at it at my advanced age, Jeff.
Well, we're on audio, Steve, so you sound like you're 22. You don't need to give those things away.
Okay.
Especially with the quality microphone. And obviously, I mean, that is just the A list of clientele. Are you right? You're talking about universities and having the Ivy schools. A couple of follow-up directs from that. Can you speak to the type of programs that universities like that are doing specifically that start in that direction, and then their clientele, age, you're probably not grabbing their income, but just if you had to sort of guesstimate, what is the type of clients that we would think that would go on those programs, or are you seeing?
Yeah. You could probably describe them. You know, they are well-educated, well-traveled people, fairly well-to-do financially. The trips that we offer are basically all-inclusive. We don't nickel and dime anybody. We include in our trip price all the excursions, all tips to all the guides. If it's a small ship, we include tips to shipboard staff, all the taxes, fees, everything included except airfare. Most of these folks want to arrange their own air. And so they are relatively expensive trips. Land tours start at $5,000-$7,000 per person and go up. If it's a small ship, charter, and by small ship, I'm talking really small. We charter ships with as few as 14, 18 cabins, a few with 50 or 60 cabins. If it's a larger ship and we feel that one of our alumni clients or museum clients can't fill it on their own, we arrange what we call co-sponsorships. And that's actually a great situation for everybody, because we might have two or three lecturers on the same program. Once everybody's on board, it's one big happy family. We don't separate folks by their affinity. Everybody goes to all the lectures. Everybody mixes in the dining room and on the shore excursions. And so we're told that a lot of our people, and you asked about age group, well, you can imagine they're in their 60s, 70s, most of them.
Okay.
We get a few younger ones. It seems that every time we try for a younger clientele, and I've been doing this for 50 years, it's really hard.
So you in certain departures, you will mix groups together. Is there like a don't put Yale with Harvard graduates because they tend to talk smack in the dining room, or you know, any hard no's on that? Or is that
actually they like it that way? They like it that way. The only time we've had any problem, well, I should say, our clients enjoy traveling with peer institutions. And so if we do have a couple of Ivy sponsors on a small ship, then we try not to include one of our lesser known schools or a small museum somewhere, because we do want folks to get along. In fact, most of our participants say one of the best aspects of a co-sponsored trip is all the interesting people they meet who aren't necessarily didn't necessarily have the same, college experience. Or in the case of a museum, most of our museum travelers are local to a local museum. But for the Alumni Association, of course, they come from all over the country. In fact, all over the world. And I should say, I'm mentioning co-sponsored trips, especially because historically, as I said, we focused on our clients. We've usually maintained exclusivity if we're running a trip sponsored by one of these institutions. Since the pandemic, things have loosened up quite a bit. And so we're now in a situation where our affinities, if they don't fill a ship, for example, or a tour, they're willing to let us bring in other folks. Mm. And so now more so than ever, we're able to accept people who aren't necessarily a member of a sponsoring organization. And usually, the trip itself, the price point, the sponsors, that's a little bit of a filter. And so we generally tend to get folks who get along with our affinity travelers. Nice. And for that matter, we're also now starting to organize trips that aren't sponsored by one of our longtime affinity clients. So if you have any readers, for example, who are interested in setting up a trip, a relatively high level trip, might be for the trustees of a local museum or something like that. We've actually run several trips for leaders of institutions, led by leaders, including some of the presidents of our sponsors.
Okay.
So we're very accustomed to running a relatively high-end trip that takes a lot of hands-on. Everybody's expectations are high. But generally speaking, I can say that we've been successful doing that.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because that's got to be an entirely different way of marketing. I mean, in the past, you've got Yale or Harvard as a client, and you're basically giving them the inventory. They have the contacts, they have the marketing, the newsletters, the events together. But this requires you to go out to the world and say, we have this trip available. So that had to have been somewhat of a sea change organizationally for you to sort of put that marketing hat on these type of trips.
Sure. Pre-pandemic, almost always we would print and mail brochures for our client organizations. We used their brand. We kept our brand in the background. So we had their permission to print a brochure, with the Princeton logo on it and a letter signed by the director of the travel program there, et cetera. They lend us their mailing list. We mail them. Things have changed post-pandemic. Part of it has to do with a whole push towards sustainability. And that's an important pillar of what we do, too. We work very hard to make our trips as sustainable as we can. But some of our clients have now foregone completely printing and mailing brochures. They promote their programs electronically, exclusively, with their websites, with emails. And we're prepared to do that as well for other tour operators or travel agents who are interested in having us set up a trip for them. We're very capable of planning and carrying out the marketing that is needed to fill the trip.
Nice,
and I should say too, I mentioned earlier, our PR coordinator, Mike Hicks, We're working now with Mike to get our name out there a bit and help us spread the word about some of the trips that are already available to other travelers. And then hopefully moving forward, some of the trips that that are not sponsored by one of our affinity clients.
Gotcha. So curious to know, you mentioned earlier, you're obviously running trips worldwide. Where are you seeing the greatest demand right now? If you're putting out two or three different destination ideas for a client, what are they jumping on? And along those same lines, what sort of demand are you seeing? You know, overall, I think in the industry, we've seen a very robust return to travel. Has that transition to the alumni travel sector as well, the affinity travel sector? Are you seeing that similar, or are there some pockets of opportunity for growth still?
No, it's pretty much the same, because these alumni or museum members are just like most of the general public. They're interested in going to the same places, usually. Sometimes you'll have a theme that will dictate the destination. For example, you know, we just had an eclipse trip in Texas.
Oh, cool.
We have a growing expertise in planning and operating trips with astronomy as a theme. So we run lots of trips down in Chile and Argentina, where some of the big telescopes are installed, the Canary Islands, Hawaii. So sometimes the destination is dictated by the theme of the trip. But to answer your question, I'd say the really hot destinations we're seeing right now, Japan is really big. We run multiple land tours and small ship charters in Japan, even a family trip there. We have a few family trips. It was very interesting. We had a destination that was really coming back strongly after the pandemic was Egypt. We had three trips in Egypt planned for this past winter. Fortunately, our full payment deadline had come and gone, and most people had paid in full prior to October 7th. Obviously, we had a lot of concern by our institutions as well as the travelers about whether it was safe to go. We also had most of our trips have a number of Jewish travelers as well, and they were pretty concerned about going that close to what was happening in Gaza. And our people in Egypt and the State Department and all our risk assessment folks told us it's okay to go to Egypt right now. So we did end up operating all three of those trips, and people could not have been more pleased. They were fantastic programs. Obviously not the big crowds there that there might have been otherwise, but the people who went loved it. And so when the time comes, I know Egypt is going to come back. It's a bucket list trip. And a lot of people coming out of the pandemic realized, you know what, they might be running out of time. They'd better tick off some of these destinations on their bucket list that they haven't been to yet. And so, obviously, Egypt is iconic. Europe, most of our programs still go to Europe. Italy being number one. So Italy's very, very popular. That's about it.
Gotcha. It's really encouraging to see that you moved forward with the Egypt trip. I know that part of the world is really hurting right now. They so rely upon tourism for, you know, not just the big hotels, but the sightseeing guides and the independent tour companies and such. We've had writers on the ground in Egypt, in Jordan, in Israel this year alone, and just really trying to get an assessment of what's happening in the marketplace. And, you know, in many respects, In fact, my managing editor just got back from Israel last week. He said, in many ways, it's the perfect time to go as a tourist because there's nobody there. And so they really need your help at this point. But the travel experience now, if you get over the fear of, and obviously I don't mean to discount that, because I think that's obviously really weird. You can't tell somebody just not to be concerned or scared, but you're able to see and do things unfiltered, whereas you might have to wait in line or pricing is going to be quite a bit of difference. So to see companies like yours really, you know, carry that through and make sure you're putting the right steps in place to ensure a safe journey, it certainly helps everybody out locally.
Oh, you're very right. And not only does it support the local folks, one of the aspects that made these trips so enjoyable to the participants we sent was that all the people in Egypt welcomed them with open arms. They were so happy to see Americans traveling there. As you say, it makes a big difference to them in their economy. But I'll tell you, a lot of these post-trip evaluations, that comment was made that it people couldn't have been more welcoming, that our travelers couldn't have felt more safe. So in addition to supporting the destination, it was a nice experience for our travelers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you mentioned earlier that you've got some trips that are designed for families. And I remember, I don't know how many years ago, certainly wasn't yesterday, I interviewed the alumni director for the University of Texas. And I thought she had a unique program because they started developing programs for alumni right after graduation. And they did so because they wanted to sort of embed the thought process with recent alumni to stay close to the school and to try to be active in the activities. Now, obviously those trips were much different than the ones that you're doing or even they offered to their older clientele. Have you seen that in any of your other clients where they're maybe doing a Masters golf weekend for alumni in their 30s or, Kentucky Derby or Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, or even international that's geared towards a little bit older audience? Because I think that's been the rub specifically on the alumni market is that, you're dealing with an older audience and, does that next generation transition in the same way that the current one is?
Oh, you bet. It's a big concern of all the alumni associations that we work with, that they keep those young alums tied to the institution and groom them to continue to be involved as they get older. It's just a really tough sell, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And we have some clients who have set up programs specifically for young alumni. They've pulled mailing lists from graduation lists from recent years. And they've publicized them as young alumni trips because there's always been kind of a stigma against group travel amongst younger people because they don't want to be stuck with a bunch of old travelers that have a schedule and it's dictated where they go, et cetera. But I can't pinpoint any of these programs that have been successful. There are a few tour operators that specialize in operating trips for younger people. That they tend to be more active programs. So, and some of those operators are active in the affinity travel niche as well. But in terms of, it's just been, I can't think of an extremely successful program. One of my favorite stories, I was calling on the alumni director at Caltech once, and I was going to walk over to their development office because we were going to run a trip for them as well, their fundraisers. And as we walked across campus, it was practically deserted. And I said, gosh, I thought school was in session. And this guy laughed and he said, well, it is, and everybody's studying. He said, my biggest challenge as alumni director at Caltech is engaging alumni again, because once they leave here, they are so sick of this place, they don't want to see it again. So it took him years to attract alumni back to get involved with alumni association activities. So,
gotcha. So I get that with alumni, and certainly, you're not the first person that's said to me. I've also gone to like that ETC show, which maybe one of your staff members have gone to that before. That's been the rub. Does that same problem persist in the affinity organization? So if it's a museum or a cultural institution, are they drawing a wider variety of age groups, or does it still tend to fit into that typical mold of what you would see with the alumni trips?
They are making efforts, and primarily that's by sponsoring trips that are more active in nature. There are walking trips, there are bicycling trips, rafting trips, and again, these programs kind of self-select younger, more active people. So that effort's certainly being made.
Gotcha. Okay. So, looking at this industry, and you mentioned some of the elite clients that you work with, but there's all different levels of colleges, universities, fine arts organizations, museums, and such. If you were to talk to, let's say, an independent museum in Lawrence, Kansas, for example, and they're trying to develop a better community outreach and membership programs, what's the case for starting a travel program?
So starting a travel program from scratch is really challenging. Mm-hmm. So I think my advice to an institution like this is not to try to offer some trips, especially too many trips, that are exclusively yours, because you need to get enough people on a trip to make it viable financially to operate. So my advice might be to try co-sponsoring a trip or two, so that the onus isn't upon you to generate enough people to say, okay, we're willing to operate this trip. And so once people get used to traveling with the institution, and your base will grow, and the base is really the key to success of an affinity travel program. So I'd say kind of start small and maybe join in and co-sponsor with another institution or two that's like you. And then over time, you'll be able to operate some exclusive trips.
Gotcha. In any sectors that you see of the larger affinity market that maybe are more accepting or better candidates for this? Because, you know, we'd certainly like to see more of these organizations travel. I think there's a lot of inherent benefits to it. But anything that you've experienced or requests that are coming in from organizations that may be bubbling up over others?
You know, it's a good question. Nothing really comes to mind. I know that there are a lot of affinities beyond the museums and alumni institutions, and there's a pretty substantial amount of travel. And I'm thinking of bank travel. I mean, you had a podcast not too long ago, somebody who focuses on travel organized by banks, and of course, religious travel, church travel, church groups. That's been around for a long time. And I think that's ongoing. I don't know that anything new has been bubbling up.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I'm always looking for trends, Steve. So when you find that, you need to send me an email.
Okay.
I was at the, was it a week and a half ago? We were traveling back from spring break, and we stopped at the National Corvette Museum in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which was a great experience, by the way. So two things. Now, of course, I'm a travel guy, so I'm always thinking, like, how does this fit into the bigger picture? First of all, there's like 18,000 Corvette clubs across the United States. Right. So I'm like, oh, that's a great affinity organization. And then when you learn that the average Corvette first-time buyer is 65 years of age, I'm like, oh, there's got to be a great group travel play there somewhere.
That sounds great. Good idea. Yeah. I won't steal it. Or if I do, I'll give you credit.
I'm not a tour operator, so by all means, go for it. Steve, you've been doing this now. You mentioned, 50 years in the tour business. Is anything surprising you right now about what's happening in business, either within your organization or the industry overall?
Oh, I think I'm out of surprises. I mean, one thing I would tell, well, you say starting a travel program. I'd say starting a small company, especially a tour operator, you have to be prepared to hang on, because it's going to be a roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. Things are always going to happen, whether they're local, like an earthquake or a volcanic eruption, or global. That's going to affect your business. The travel industry is, well, we all know it was one of the industries most hard hit through the pandemic. It just shut down. And so there'll be those times. And so if you're going to get into the business, you need to be able to get up again once you've been knocked down. I would say too, I always give advice to people who want to start up. Do your best to find the best people that you can, because that's what makes the difference. I had a good friend and a mentor who told me he never hired anybody who wasn't smarter than him. And of course, we teased him and said, "Well, that bar is not very high, Peter." But that's what I've tried to do. And we have several very well-educated folks on our staff, and I should say, It's such an engaging business, travel. Mm-hmm. I was all set to go to law school. I'd actually been admitted when I took a part-time job with Maupin Tour, and it didn't take long before I was bitten by the travel bug. And so that's easy to have happen. And so our little group, we have a core group of six or eight people that have been together for anywhere from 20 to 30 years now. Mm-hmm. They stayed together through thick and thin. That's one of the aspects that we enjoy so much. It's very much a people business. We love each other and working with one another. We have great relationships with our clients and our suppliers, and those go a long way toward sustaining a company through the rough times. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, especially in the tour business, I know there's a lot of contemporaries that I sort of grew up with in the business that over COVID just said, you know, no mas. And, you know, I could, on one hand, I can totally see it because, you know, we went from white hot in 2019 to, you know, no go for most companies even through 2021. So it was very lean. But those that did have the fortitude and, you know, kept the staff and kept the processes in place have certainly borne the fruits of that labor. Because you know, we seem to be operating on all cylinders again, so I couldn't be happier about that.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, that's one reason we did make it through, the fact that we were fairly small, and we had people who were able to take salary cuts and work shorter hours, so we were able to keep staff together. And as you say, all of a sudden, as we pretty much rocketed out of the pandemic time, yeah, those of us who had trained staff really had a leg up. And a lot of companies, and I mean, a good example we've all seen recently, American Queen, the impression I have is that they simply couldn't staff up and train people fast enough, and their service levels just didn't and it spelled the end of the company. So again, I think staff is critically important to success in this business.
Yeah, it's an interesting tale for sure, because that was an iconic American brand and certainly a loyal clientele as well. I'm sure you've set many travelers on that, and it just basically, you know, dissolved over the last year or so. But partly because that is, you know, if you're spending that sort of money on a trip, you expect that if I want tea at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's going to arrive sometime before 3:30. You know, not.
Right.
Good. Well, Steve, I really appreciate the insight in our conversation today and learning more about your sector of the business. If somebody's interested in reaching out to you, what's the best way to get a hold of you or the organization?
Well, they could just go on our website, criteriontravel.com. It's easy to reach any of us in the organization. Our emails are firstname@criteriontravel.com. So I'm steve@criteriontravel.com. But yeah, we'd be interested in talking with anyone who might have listened to this podcast and might be interested in learning more about what we might do for them. Absolutely. Get in touch and we'll respond.
Awesome. Great. Well, thanks again for your time today, Steve.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
Get paid to travel the world with friends and family as the leader of your very own travel tribe. This book by travel industry publisher Jeff Gader will show you how. Order your copy of Traveling Tribes at leisuregrouptravel.com or at Amazon. Type in keyword